We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's going on, everybody? Bronx Pinstripe Show number 18. We are rolling along. The Yankees are rolling along since last weekend. Good news here. Scott, what's up?
What's up, Andrew? I'm good, man. Six in a row. My voice is probably the worst thing that we're going to talk about today because it's in pretty bad shape after a Billy Joel concert. And yeah, man, I'm excited to watch these guys playing some good ball lately.
Was it strictly 80s Billy Joel, or was it everything?
I mean, Billy Joel plays the hits, I think, when you go to his concert. It's the first time I've ever been there, and it was awesome. I mean, the guy could still belt. And what was crazy about last night is that my voice really got shot because while we were walking in, my wife and her friend got flagged down by like the beer line or whatever by one of Billy Joel's PR guys, and they upgraded our seats to the orchestra, so we were literally
seriously
in the third row. Yeah,
How'd you swing that?
I outkicked my coverage and I married up. That's what happened. and apparently Billy Joel likes blondes. So yeah, man, we ended up literally in the very front row of Billy Joel. It was ridiculous.
That's
it was
sick.
Awesome. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
So I guess you had a good time, right?
I had a great time, and I'm paying for it right now a little bit. But yes, it was a lot of fun. It was Gavin DeGraw opened for him, which I didn't even know was happening, and then Billy Joel played for a while, like 3 hours. So he played all the good stuff.
So it was like, did you tailgate all afternoon and stuff?
Yeah, we tailgated. We had a winery early on, and then so it was a long day, man. A little bit of boozing. Yeah,
wow.
Well, it was just a new one, so we had wanted to check it out, and then we went and tailgated for like 3 hours as well. So yeah, it was a lot, man.
All right, so how are you feeling this morning?
Better than I was expecting, actually. I'm a seasoned pro at this point.
Yeah, you're a vet, right?
I'm a vet. The voice can't handle it, though. The voice gets shot fast. But that's from singing Piano Man and, you know, Vienna and all the songs moving out. I thought I was Billy Joel for a little bit there.
So I think you and I both had a busy weekend. I was actually up at a wedding in Vermont. One of my best friends from college is got married yesterday to
nice.
Another one of my best friends from college. So we were all up there for the wedding. So I totally missed Friday through Sunday. But I'll still talk about it and pretend I watched. And you guys just won't know that I'm talking out of my ass.
Well, now they will, but that's okay.
Yeah.
But that's the beauty about highlights. We can. The cool thing about it is because I had missed a couple games just because of I had things going on. But I mean, you can track everything on your phone, and literally, I can see what's happening. And then the highlights are so fast and immediate and thorough. So, you know.
Well, I didn't think it would look good if I'm. You know, I was a groomsman, so if I was standing up there, you know, checking my phone, seeing what's going on, I didn't think that would be a good look.
Yeah, so you're not in the commercial with the guy checking his phone at the wedding.
Yeah. this was like the first of my close friends to get married.
Okay.
So I think my group of friends are going to start getting into the weddings. You know, we're approaching that age here, late 20s, where the dominoes are going to start to fall and people are going to start to get married. But weddings are freaking awesome, man, especially when it's like all your close friends, people you went to college with. It was just a blast.
Well, what I've realized is that when you you and I know this, but I'm a little older than you. I actually turned 35 on Friday. And when we go to weddings now, and you're probably experiencing this now because you're going through the wedding, you know, run of all your friends, is you act like when you get together, it's college again.
Yep.
Because that's the only way you know how to handle these people, hang out with these people. And you just revert.
So it was, we rented a house. So we all went to school at UVM and we were in a frat, and it was the street that the frat was on. We ended up renting a house for this weekend that was about a block down the street. So it was really a blast from the past, where we just immediately reverted into college mode.
Yeah, it's impossible not to.
Yeah, three straight days of degenerate drinking and partying, and it was an awesome time.
Oh, that's good. And that she showed up, he showed up.
Yep.
Everybody's still married. That's good.
Yeah, as of 8 p.m. on Sunday, they are still married, which
nice.
Is good. About 24 hours later, they have not gone things off yet. So
good news. Good for them.
In all seriousness, though, I'm extremely happy for them. I know the guy who got married, he does listen to the show. He's a Yankees fan as well. So, Chris, shout out to you. It was an awesome wedding, and congrats.
Nice. Congrats, Chris.
Yes. So, it's been a busy week.
It has been a busy week. We've done a lot of stuff, both the Yankees and Bronx Pinstripes, you know, our website. Our servers have crashed. We've made national news. We've brought on, you know, four or five new writers, which I'm really excited about. We have some really cool contests that we're running. There's just a ridiculous amount of things going on.
So the Hank Steinbrenner Golf Tournament contest, what's that about?
Yeah, so that's something that's actually really exciting. We got in touch with some of the people who are running the golf tournament, and we were able to get some tickets that we can give away. So we're actually giving away a pair of tickets to go to the cocktail hour and the dinner after the golf tournament itself. And there's going to be a ridiculous amount of Yankees there. The dinner is actually to honor Dellin Betances and some of the nonprofit stuff that he's doing. But A-Rod's going to be there for an hour at least. All the Yes guys are going to be there. So you got Cone, and then Michael Kay, and a lot of those guys are going to be there. Boomer Wells, Willie Randolph, Donald Trump's going to be there. So there's a whole slew of guys that are Cecil Fielder, Reggie Jackson. And the cool thing about this is that there's going to be access to these guys, from what I understand. And so whoever wins these two tickets is really going to have a good opportunity to, you know, to shake some hands, take some pictures, and meet some of these guys. So it's really cool.
All right. So two tickets. How do they win? How do they enter?
We have it on our Facebook page. There's a form. If you look, Facebook has apps, so you'll see on the left hand side that says win ticket. So go there and enter that way. We'll be promoting it Monday. So when this is released Monday morning, you'll see a whole bunch of stuff on Facebook and probably Twitter, and we will go there too. So I'm going to be there as well. So that'll be fun. We'll be able to meet the people who win, and we'll hang out with them for a little bit, and then we'll go in. So that's it. It'll be really cool. It's going to be a really cool experience.
Yeah, that's an awesome prize. I mean, that's like better than game tickets. You get to actually meet some of these guys.
Yeah, it's and it's July 6th, so it's right after the 4th of July weekend. It's an off day. So they'll be out in full force. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Awesome. That sounds great. And we've got, you know, hopefully someone from the Bronx Faithful will win these tickets, right? We started, you know, about the hashtag Bronx Faithful. Our first blog of just pictures on Instagram and Twitter, and people sending in pictures using the hashtag from the games, went up last week. It was pretty awesome to see just really the how far we've reached, and we just started this a couple weeks ago. So I think by the end of the season, this is going to be a huge thing.
No, I agree. And, you know, we did this last post. So we do a Bronx Faithful post now. We've just started doing it to just kind of show all the Yankee fans with the hashtag. And it's just a cool way to connect to the fans and have you guys. It's just, I think it's fun to see the stream of fans at the game. And this one was only Instagram, but we're going to start including Twitter as well. So I know today we got a whole bunch of Bronx Faithful tags on Twitter as well. So just keep them coming in, man. And guys, and we'll, you know, we'll start putting up even more on the post. So I think I'm going to make a page too of all the pictures, so that'll be cool.
And definitely, if you have a shirt, one of the Bronx Pinstripe shirts, you know, take a selfie, have someone take a picture of you, use the hashtag, and we'll definitely get your picture up there on the site.
Yep, absolutely. There's a whole bunch of them on there right now. So,
all right, so we got some new family members to the Bronx Pinstripes family.
We do. We're up to we have right around 20 writers now. We brought some new people on. We did an expansion. We have some big news coming up that we'll probably announce next week on the podcast.
Big league tease.
And so we got some good stuff coming up, and yeah, and some new writers, which I'm really excited about. These guys, you know, I kind of put there's a process when people are coming in, and you know, I do a bunch of emailing with them back and forth, and you know, so we really screen the writers when they come on to Bronx Pinstripes, and a lot of these guys are either journalism majors or have graduated, or so we have some really talented new guys coming on to kind of join the talent that we already have. So it's exciting to see new people, and everybody's just passionate Yankee fans, which is awesome because that's what the site is. And it's all Yankee fans talking about the Yankees for the Yankees fans. So it's really coming to fruition, which is awesome.
It is. It's good to see. You know, I remember the days when it was just three of us, and now we're up to 20. So
three of us in the lowly NYYUniverse.com. We have grown.
R.I.P. R.I.P. NYY Universe.
That's right. That's okay. Bronx Pinstripes dominates NYY Universe now. So I'm happy that all that went down.
So you mentioned this a few minutes ago, that we sort of started a war between people from Seattle and New York this past week.
Yep.
And I don't know if, you know, for people listening, if you saw, I posted a blog about Robinson Cano not being happy in Seattle. I posted it on, I think, Tuesday.
Right.
And this is just, this was me reacting to something Michael Kay said on his radio show, that Cano was maybe unhappy in Seattle because he felt like Jay-Z may have used him to sign a big contract, make a splash for Roc Nation. The fact that Seattle does not have a strong Dominican population, and obviously Cano is Dominican, and New York has a huge Dominican population. The fact that Seattle has long travel, it's all the way in the Northwest if he wants to get down to the Dominican. You know, his family's down there. I know his dad flies back and forth a bunch. So there's just, you know, rumors circulating that Cano might not be happy in Seattle. Very harmless rumors. And I just reacted to them. And you would have thought I criticized everybody in Seattle's mother. It was insane.
It was ridiculous.
That we got.
No, it was, well, first of all, it was a very harmless post, an article. Like, literally, you reacted to something that Michael Kay said. I mean, in no way was it, like, made...
It was not breaking news.
Yeah, and it wasn't, like, sent out like we were trying to, like, get clicks and things like that. That's just not the way it went down at all. I was expecting, you know, just a regular post. I wasn't expecting the way it went. But it got picked up by Yahoo. It got picked up by Fox Sports. It got picked up by a lot of really big... It got shared on Facebook, like, 600 times. So we had literally... you know, consistently throughout the day, we had 200 to 300 people on that article alone on the website, and it crashed our server like 15 times.
Yes,
I had to go, and I was on. Yeah, I was on the back end with our server guys like all day, just trying to keep the site up so that people could go and read it. And yeah, it was crazy the amount of attention that it got. But you're right, the comments, it turned into a New York versus Seattle war. People were just going at it like insults. Like, I mean, it was ridiculous.
Oh, I got the brunt of those insults. But we normally get about maybe one or two comments per blog post, and we got 113 that are currently on the website. We got more like 120 because we had to delete a few.
Yeah, I did go back and delete some just because, you know, I don't want any, you know, cursing or any of that stuff on there. Like, there were personal attacks going on. Like, that's just not going to fly on the site. But, yeah, it was – I don't mind good-hearted banter, but, you know, you start – throwing some F-bombs and personally attacking people.
Yeah, the one guy that just came out and just said, F you, Andrew. Yeah. He said the word. I'm like, wow, did I really insult you that much that you just, you know, just anonymously posting on a website, you know?
Yeah.
It was fun. It was fun, though. It was fun. Good. I wasn't doing it for that reason. I wasn't trying to you know, incite a little war there, but it's fun to see that passion in the fans, you know, people going at it. That's why baseball's so great. That's why, you know, I thought it was a great series in Seattle, and I think that just added to it for me, at least.
Yeah, it was a great series for us, for sure. It was definitely a lot better for us than it was for them, but it was. I mean, I think that kind of fueled it. It got me more pumped up. And ever since they knocked Mattingly out, man, I've had a very large dislike for the Seattle Mariners. So I'm good with what happened. I'm very happy. And yeah, you know.
I just want to react to one comment, though, if you'll let me.
Yeah, go ahead.
So on the website, it says, you know, we have a little bio, and it says that I'm from Rhode Island, which is where I'm from. And somebody, you know, said some nasty things about my home state. You know, yes, the usuals, that it's the smallest state, you know, blah, 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 that apparently he doesn't like the Tennis Hall of Fame. Like, you know, we can't get the Baseball Hall of Fame. Like, give us a break. Little does he know, we invented Dell's Lemonade, which is the shit. And also Rocco Baldelli. So joke's on him. So next time, you know, don't throw stones, man.
There you go. Go Rhode Island, man. That's a, you got to stand up for.
And there's
state.
Plenty of Yankee fans in Rhode Island. People, you know, some people give me shit that, you know, I should be a Red Sox fan since I grew up technically in New England. But there's a good amount of Yankee fans in Rhode Island. And you know, my dad's side of my family has some New York roots, which is where the Yankee fandom comes from.
That's anyway. Good. You don't need to defend your Yankee fandom. I'm pretty sure that, you know, you host a podcast on a website that covers just Yankees for, you know, 5 years. So I think you've done a good job with that.
Anyway, so you ready to get into some of these game recaps here?
Let's do it. It's been a good week of baseball.
Exactly. Good week of baseball, 6-0 since they laid an egg in Oakland. But after they did lay that egg, they are going up against King Felix Monday night. And, of course, they shell him, because that's what the 2015 Yankees do. They go to Oakland and get their ass kicked, and then they go in against the best pitcher in baseball and absolutely crush him. I just can't figure this team out sometimes.
Yeah, you expect to just get mowed over in that game going into Seattle after
not mowed over. I mean, it was an awesome pitching matchup. Pineda versus King Felix. That's about as good as it gets.
Well, I'm not mowed over with the sense that Pineda's pitching fine. But I mean, what I meant is that you expect Felix Hernandez to go in there and mow over the Yankees.
Yeah.
And, a couple things is that he did not have his good stuff at all. I mean, he had, four or five walks early on in the game. And, you and I were talking about this. He was definitely in his own head about the mound.
So the Yankees didn't have a base runner through three innings. And and he threw, 30 pitches through three innings. I'm like, King Felix is on his way to a perfect game tonight. And then it was raining in Seattle. And they have a roof. I don't know
why. They were closing it. It was closing. It just closes slowly.
You can't tell me they couldn't look at their stupid iPhones and figure out it's going to rain in about an hour and keep the roof closed. It just didn't make sense. It's like when the Marlins guys forgot to close the roof.
Right.
So you're in Seattle. It rains every other day. Keep the roof closed if there's rain in the forecast. Anyway, it got in his head. Like you said, the mound was a little muddy. It looked like he wasn't comfortable with his cleats, and he totally derailed him in the fourth inning. He had a couple walks. Yankees loaded the bases. They got two runs out of that, and I was like, oh no, they let him off the hook.
They did,
he's going to settle into the game. But then the next inning, he was still rattled, like you said, still missing his location, and the Yankees loaded the bases again, and Teixeira, he crushes Felix. I think he has 5 career home runs off King Felix, which is...
He crushes everything at Safeco, too.
Which is
Safeco
amazing.
Safeco numbers are ridiculous.
Because, plenty of people have offers against Felix. And he hit a grand slam and really put the game out of reach in the fifth inning.
Yeah, I mean, that was a really big moment. And so Texas numbers, I think at the end of it, we put up a graphic on Instagram. In Seattle, his numbers career are .287 average, 19 home runs, and 47 RBIs. So he loves Safeco Field, and that was a huge moment to just it was kind of a knockout punch to King Felix at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. I was stunned, and Pineda was strong the whole game, which was about as good as a Yankee win as you can get.
Yep, it was awesome. And, Pineda going back into Seattle.
Yep.
Obviously, you have that headline there with Pineda, with the trade, obviously, that we sent Montero to Seattle. And then, just kind of Pineda versus Big Mike versus King Felix type deal. He stepped up to the plate, no pun intended. But he really did, kind of man up on that occasion and showed a lot of moxie. So that was really good to see. Because I know you and I have talked about this over the past couple weeks where we were maybe questioning a little bit some of his mental toughness after, that one outing in the Bronx.
No, he went in there on a mission, and he stepped up big time.
Yep.
Tuesday, they won in extra innings. This was a freaking awesome game. It was an 11-inning game on the West Coast, so it ended around 2 a.m.
Yeah.
If you did stay up and watch it, it was one of the more exciting games of the year. So CC started the game, and he was pretty good through 5 innings. He got out of a big jam in the fourth. I don't know if you saw this, but Seager tried to bunt with 2 outs and a guy on third. And obviously we know CC has not fielded his position very well this year. But he did make a nice play, and he was really fired up after it. He was sort of – I don't know if he was mad at Seager for bunting or if he was just fired up that he made the play. But yeah. That was good to see out of CC.
So that makes 2 because the last one and then today he was today being Sunday we're recording he's shown a lot more fire lately, and I think it's personally a frustration on his part because
probably
he's not used to being bad. He's been a top line starter his entire life up until the past couple years, and I think it's just frustrating for him that he's not doing well. So I love seeing that fire.
So he's through 5 innings. He was at 80 pitches. And we talked about this last week that's about been his ceiling this year. 5 or 6 innings, 80, 85 pitches. And then he really falls off a cliff. But Girardi brought him back out for the 6th inning. It was a tie game at this point. It was 2-2. And he brought him back out for the 6th inning. And got in trouble, and in comes David Carpenter, who's no longer here, so I can only get so mad at him. And he gave up a double to Austin Jackson, who was 4-for-4 on the night. And that was just classic. That was it for David Carpenter. Obviously, he got DFA'd after the game. But first of all, Girardi, what are you doing bringing CC back out when we've seen time after time this year he's already reached his limit? And 2... why are you bringing in David Carpenter in a pressure situation? It's just, again, another thing that Girardi does that I don't understand.
Yeah, his management of the bullpen is just, it's sometimes it's very head-scratching in what he does. And bringing him back out, you know, we know how his numbers look. So that's one thing. And then Carpenter, I don't get that. You know, bringing Carpenter in that situation, that makes no sense to me. So, you know, again, just it's just one of those head-scratchers from Joe.
Well, so Austin Jackson was 3-for-3 off CeCe, so he wasn't going to let CeCe face him, which I understand. And I guess you don't want to bring in a lefty to face Austin Jackson. And the Yankees' pen is thin on right-handers, so I guess Carpenter was his only option at that point.
Yeah, but that's the matchup thing that we're talking about. Like, he just reverts to the matchup of righty-lefty at that point when it doesn't matter. He doesn't look at who the righty is. Yep. You know, it's, I mean, we have guys who have very low batting averages against lefties who are left-handed pitchers. So, I mean, the matchup I understand, but we have guys who are doing well against batters on both sides of the plate.
Also, if you're going to bring Carpenter in, at least use him on a fresh inning and not in a jam, because he let something like 70% of his inherited runners score when he was with the Yankees.
That's a crazy number. So that's a ridiculous number.
It's just like, how many times are you going to get snake bitten before you finally do something about it? And they did. They cut him. They DFA'd him. So at least we don't have to see him anymore.
Yeah. But, yeah. We'll talk about that in a little bit too, because I have some comments on that one. And I totally understand why he got DFA'd, but I don't agree with the move wholeheartedly. So we'll talk about that.
We'll get that in a second. But Lloyd McClendon, the Mariners manager, had one of the best
classic
rants you're going to see. He took on all three umpires. First base umpire, then he went to the home plate umpire, then he went down the third baseline, kicked his hat, kicked dirt, got in their face. It was hilarious.
I love the fact that baseball is a sport that it's completely appropriate to like kick dirt and for managers to like argue face to face. I love that it's like, you know, it's a, you know, people enjoy doing it and enjoy seeing it. And it's part of the game. I love that. I love it.
It's so funny.
The only place a grown man can do that.
Yeah, it's so funny though, because he's out there. Obviously, you can't hit the guy. So it's like he's so angry. What is he going to do? I'm just going to kick this dirt because I don't know what else to do.
Yeah. I got to do something, and dirt is the closest thing I can do.
It was awesome.
Yeah, I love it. I love manager rant. So that was a good one.
Yep, Girardi's had a few good ones too. I'll give him that. He is pretty good at getting tossed from games.
He gets fired up, man. Those veins start popping out of his neck too.
And he's got like the forearms of like a tree, like chopper or something. I would not want to mess with him when he's angry.
Right.
Anyway. The game was a great game, and we're going into the seventh inning. The Yankees are down a run, and they got a little bit of a rally going. Didi came into the game. He didn't start the game. He came into the game, and he was rounding second on a base hit. I forget who got the hit, but he was going trying to go first to third on the base hit, and he literally just fell down 3 feet after or 3 steps after second base. Throw came behind him, and he got tagged out. Killed the rally.
So is this where you're going to yell at Didi for falling?
Well, but listen, okay. I know he didn't fall on purpose, but that's just another thing we've been talking about all year where Didi makes errors like that. And it keeps building up where it gets to a point where maybe you just think Didi doesn't have good baseball instincts. Things go wrong for him for whatever reason. And, you know, I know he's been coming around with the bat lately.
He has been.
But it's things like that that piss me off.
but he wasn't reacting to like a line drive and like shifting gears or anything like that. He literally just fell coming around the bag.
Yeah,
like after the bag.
He was trying to go to third base and he just fell. It looked like he just tripped.
Okay. So to me, that's like, you know, something that's completely non-related to anything else.
Well, it's Didi being Didi.
It's Didi being Didi, I guess. Yeah. Let's improve that footwork.
Yeah.
Better balance, Didi. Come on.
I know he didn't. It's not like a he didn't boot a ball or anything. But I was really heated at the time when it happened. Yankees were down to their last few outs and. Stephen Drew came through with a game-tying hit. How about that?
I have been crushing Stephen Drew all year. And I mean, I'm probably going to continue to still crush him. So people were asking, like, immediately after those hits, and then he hit a couple home runs a couple days later, we're like, oh, are you going to stop talking shit about Stephen Drew? I'm like, no, I'm never, not going never. To stop talking about Stephen Drew, because this is what he'll do. He'll hit those two home runs. And yes, they were timely hits. They were awesome. I'm really happy that he did it. I really am, because it's not like I'm rooting against him. I'm just rooting for the uniform to do well at second base. And but what's going to happen with Stephen Drew is that he's going to follow that up with a 3 for 28. That's what's going to happen. And those threes are going to be, you know, they're going to be squibs in the infield. So he's proved over the past year, it's been a substantial amount of at-bats, that he cannot hit over 200. So, yes, while I can get excited about the moments that he does well, because they are few and far between, I will still say that we need to upgrade that position. So, rant over. But, yeah, good for him.
I feel like you feel better now.
Oh, my God. I mean, I just can't handle people coming out and saying, oh, you're going to stop talking about him. No, I'm not. I need to see a sustained amount of Stephen Drew doing well, and then I will back off. But until then, you know, I'm very happy with the moments. That's all I'll say about it.
It's interesting. You are much harder on Drew than I am, and I'm much harder on Didi than you are.
That's true. Because I feel like Stephen Drew to me is more of a vet, and he's been in the league for longer, so he is what we know he is. Didi to me is more of an unknown. So I see potential there. I don't see potential in Stephen Drew, and I'm a big potential guy. I see a hell of a lot more potential with two guys behind him that are not getting a chance to play every day. That's where I see the potential, and I see it being stomped because Perella needs to play every day in order to get that bat around. So, yes, that's why I'm very, very hard on Stephen Drew. Not necessarily Stephen Drew, but the people that are keeping him in the game.
Fair enough. Well, you want some good news?
Yes, please give me some good news.
Garrett Jones, 3-run bomb in the 11th inning to win the game. How about that?
That's awesome. That's a guy that is playing in a role that is supposed to come off the bench, provide some flexibility on defense, and some pop late in games, right? That's what we're looking for. And that's exactly what he's been doing this past week. So good for Garrett Jones to finally find that stroke.
Yeah, and I read something after, because he hit a home run the next day too. And then
yes.
I think I read something, I can't remember where I read it, that A-Rod has been really mentoring Garrett Jones. So, A-Rod, how about that? The leader leading the Yankees in 2015.
You know, the more the season goes on, the more I see A-Rod playing, the more I truly believe that he looks and actually finally has been humbled. And has been humbled by the game and the fans and everything that's happened and everything he's done. I feel like he's in a good place, and he's really taking on that kind of quiet leader role within the clubhouse. And he's really just kind of using the knowledge that he has, because he's a freak of an athlete, a freak of a baseball player that probably didn't need all the stuff that he did. And, you know, I truly, it looks like he's humbled. So, good, you know, good for him taking on that role.
Welcome to the dark side, Scott.
It's not the dark side. I still don't have a lot of respect for the man, but I have respect for the way he's handling himself this year.
So the Yankees got the extra inning win Tuesday, which was awesome. And then Wednesday, it was Tanaka's first return back, and he was unhittable.
Filthy, just filthy.
He got into one minor little jam in the third inning, and Flores, Ramon Flores, who made like a million good plays on that road trip, threw a guy out at the plate.
Twice.
And other than that, Tanaka was unhittable. He only threw 78 pitches through seven innings. They were going to limit him to 85 on the game anyway, and he had no walks. He was throwing 94, 95. I think he topped out at 95. His split looked good. He was throwing his slider. He was mixing his pitches. He got a lot of called third strikes, which means his pitches had a lot of movement. Mm-hmm. So it was just good all around.
Yeah, he looked really good. I mean, he looks healthy, right? He looks like a guy that does not have any problems with that arm. So for everything from what we saw
here.
You're right. It was awesome to see that, and especially being his first outing in, you know, back after that injury. So yeah, it looks like all on go for him. All, you know, everything is looking good.
One minor second guess here. It was so they got him through seven innings. He had 78 pitches, like I just said, and then Joe takes him out, which I totally understand because you want to keep him healthy,
right?
But in a 3-1 game, you bring in Capuano. Who
I don't
is
get that.
A converted starter to reliever because he sucked in the rotation. And the reason you have to use him in that situation is because two nights earlier you used Betances in a blowout game and then you pitched him the next night as well. So he had the day off no matter what. Like, what the hell? How is that? That's terrible bullpen management.
I don't get why that was the biggest problem for me on that one was Betances coming in on Monday night. Like, why are you why is he bringing him in a 7-2 game? Because
you know why? You know why the binder said Betances hadn't pitched in 2 days and needed work.
Yeah, see, that's the type of thing that I cannot handle, and it because it bites you in the ass the next day where he wasn't ready to go, and you bring in Capuano in a close game. I don't really understand the logic. I mean,
if it's a 6-1 game, I understand, but it's a 2-run game. Capuano's not a short reliever. He's a starter.
He just got put in that situation too. That was his first time in the bullpen coming out.
Yeah,
so yeah,
surprise, surprise,
I don't get it.
Surprise, surprise, he got in a jam, and Miller had to come in, and he got out of a bases-loaded jam anyway. Miller got 5 outs. Yes. So if you're going to use Miller for 5 outs anyway, why not just start him in the 8th inning clean and have him get a 2-out save?
Well, yeah, I don't get it. I don't get that particular move. I wouldn't have brought in Capuano. I would have brought in somebody else. But yeah, so that's a head-scratcher right there, man.
So they got out of Seattle with the 3-game sweep and then the off day. It really turned around what could have been a very disappointing road trip. So they came back home on a little bit of a roll. They were in first place. Angels coming into town. And this is where I go dark because I did not watch any of the games over the weekend.
Yeah, so they coming off of that Seattle trip, they needed to win that series, in my opinion, because I think maybe the Yankees also internally were a little shell-shocked from that Oakland series.
Yep.
I think that kind of hit the team relatively hard, and they came out fired up, all cylinders going in Seattle. So that was a big, you know, just for the confidence of the team.
It seems like they kind of play up to their competition, which, you know, Oakland, worst team in the league, they play like crap. And then Seattle, who, you know, record-wise might not be one of the best teams in the league, but they were going up against Felix Hernandez. The Mariners have Nelson Cruz, who's probably the best hitter in the league this year. So they got a lot of good players on the team, obviously Cano as well. And they swept them. So, you know, I don't know. I can't figure this team out.
Yeah, well, it's okay, you know, because now we're on the hot side of that streak. So,
yeah,
unfortunately, there's another side of what's on the other side of this streak is what I'm,
yeah,
what I'm
it's
scared
much,
about.
It's much better when you can't figure out why they're winning than when you can't figure out why they're losing.
Right, exactly. So Friday night they come in and they win 8-7. Drew, again, this is where I was talking about. He had two home runs. So, hey, maybe he's coming around. Maybe you've seen that. But to me, it's like fool's gold. Like he shows a couple good games, like right on the brink where he's about to get. I feel like he's like that close to getting DFA'd. Like really, like this week, he had another bad week. I swear he was gone. And now he's like right back in the mill, and we're gonna see another streak. But
so here's the reason why I don't think they're gonna let him go is because they need as many middle infielders as they can get because no one has really stepped up. So they're not just going to let somebody go. They're going to try and find somebody who's getting hot. And maybe Drew's getting hot.
Maybe. But the problem, here's the problem for me now. Because now we have two guys. We have Stephen Drew, and then we have Brendan Ryan, who's rehabbing in AAA. Yeah. And to me, they're very similar players. Brendan Ryan doesn't have as much power, but neither one of them are going to hit for average. And they're both, you know, plus defenders. So to me, they're both great utility guys. They can both play second and short, and they're great guys to have as flexibility as a utility guy. Like, I have no problem with Stephen Drew being on the team as a utility guy because he's got pop, he's got a great glove, so that's kind of what you're looking for. Maybe a late game pinch hit home run type thing, and you know, defense. That's good. That's a good role for him, in my opinion. Having Perella as a starter, or you know, bringing up Refsteiner and having one of these two guys as a late game defender, I have no problem with that. But problem I have is that him getting hot and them sticking with him as the everyday guy, and then Perella as a utility guy. With to me, Perella is not going to come around with the bat unless he's playing every day.
Absolutely. Which is why if they do call up Brendan Ryan, he's going to go down because he's the one with options.
Perella
is. And I guess I understand it, because what good is Perella just sitting on the bench playing once a week? You're never going to get him going. He needs at-bats.
But that's the thing. Like, I don't want Drew and Ryan on the roster at the same time. Yeah, they're the same guy.
Yep.
So that's the biggest problem for me, is that I think that Perella needs to be in that everyday second base role. You know, give him some time to prove that he can do it, or not prove, whatever, but give him some time, because at this point it's, you know, why not? And then having Drew or Ryan as one of those guys, be the utility backup guy. So that to me is the ideal situation.
So Eovaldi pitched 5 1/3. He only gave up 4 hits, which is good. You know, he usually gives up about 9 hits in 5 1/3 innings.
Right.
Only one run, so again, good. But 4 walks and 93 pitches, not even through 6 innings. It's just way too much.
It is way too much. But, you know, I tweeted this while watching him pitch. And, obviously you've been harder on Eovaldi than I am, because I'm a very big potential person, right? I really do. I love potential. I have more patience with people that have that potential. And to me, Evaldi's that guy. Evaldi's just, I don't know. He just looks so close to being, that much better. Like, he's so close.
You're dazzled by the mid-90s fastball.
I am. I'm dazzled by the stuff. I really am. And, you know, the walks, that right there is a little unfamiliar to him. He doesn't walk as many guys, but he throws a lot of pitches, and that's his problem. Like, he doesn't have that put out. Nope. He doesn't have that killer put out pitch that he can, you know, start managing that pitch count a little bit better and make guys miss, with 2 strikes. So, you know, he's still a work in progress, in my opinion, and hopefully he just keeps getting better and keeps getting better. But yeah, he's got to get better with his location. That's his Achilles heel.
So I was at the rehearsal dinner Friday night. I checked the score, and they were crushing him. It was, I think, 8-2 going into the ninth inning, right?
Yes.
What the hell happened?
Oh my gosh. So this is where I tweeted, I'm going to destroy Espiel Rogers on this podcast, and here it comes. So, okay, so Espiel Rogers should have had an out. He comes into the game, mop-up duty, perfect situation for Espiel Rogers. This is exactly why I want him. This is exactly the situation I want him in. Mop-up duty, 8-2, okay, perfect. Espiel Rogers, finish the game out, give up a run, fine, whatever. Let's end this game. I had The Wire season 4 queued up, ready to watch with my wife because she's never seen it. I'm like, ready to go. Like, let's just get 3 out so I can get out on my night. And lo and behold, a fly ball, routine fly ball to Chase Headley. He's camped underneath it. Perella's behind him. He must have heard
Headley
something.
Headley moved over to first.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Perella, yes, Headley moved over to first. So he moved out of the way because he heard Perella say something. I guess he heard him call it or whatever. I don't know what happened there. Ball drops, runner on first. And then from there, it was just a disaster. Espiel Rogers was walking guys, hits. I mean, it was a complete meltdown of an inning. And then Betances had to come up and clean up Espiel Rogers' mess. And he gave up, you know, the first run of his season, earned run, right?
Yeah.
And then he finally got out of it, and the Yankees won the game. But
well, he gave up all of Espiel Rogers' runs and then one of his own.
Yeah, so, I mean, he came into a situation that was obviously less than ideal. Yeah. And, you know, his numbers are way better when Betances comes in with a clean inning. And but, yeah, it was just terrible. Espiel Rogers, like, come on, bro. You know, tie one on, put the game in the books, gets 3 outs. And,
so listen,
and let's go home.
I understand you get a pop-up that should be caught and it's not caught. You know, that can mess with some guys. But you're still in a blowout game. Just throw strikes and get out of the game.
And that's what was the problem. His stuff, I mean, they keep talking about his stuff and patience with his stuff. So this is what I was talking about earlier with Carpenter, and I kind of want to touch on it now because I think it's a perfect time to touch on it. So David Carpenter gets DFA'd earlier in the week. And in my opinion, with all the struggles that David Carpenter's had this season, I get it. He probably deserves it, right? But in my opinion, stuff-wise, I'm keeping him on the roster and I'm getting rid of Rogers because I see more potential. I'll go back to this potential thing again. I've seen Carpenter do it. You know, when he was with the Braves, he had some good numbers. I don't know why he's, you know, hitting this the struggles that he hit this year, but I kind of know what Espiel Rogers is already. He is this guy. He's a guy you're not going to get a lot of production from in that middle relief role. And to me, Carpenter has a lot more potential. So I think they DFA'd the wrong guy. Personally, I don't think either one of them would have been a great situation, but I don't know. Rodgers is more of a journeyman type guy, where Carpenter has a lot more upside for that bullpen. So that's where I disagree with the move.
I think they DFA'd the right guy, but I also don't think Rodgers is going to be on this team much longer. And the reason I think they DFA'd the right guy in Carpenter is because he was never going to have it with the Yankees. If you saw his body language on the mound in Seattle, he was throwing balls in the dirt. He was throwing 55-foot sliders. He looked terrible. Right. I understand his stuff is good, and he can throw 98 miles an hour, and he had a good couple years in Atlanta. But, you know, for whatever reason, he could not pitch with the Yankees, and I don't think he was going to get it. And they couldn't keep throwing him out there waiting for him to get it, watching him blow games. So they made the right move there. But I don't know how much longer Esmel Rodgers is going to be on this team. Frankly, he should be gone as soon as Chris Martin is called up, hopefully healthy, because that's a right-hander I think they can rely on out of the pen. But I think the only reason...
But we need more right-handed pitching as well. It's not just we can't just sit on one guy.
The only reason Rodgers is in the pen right now, I think, is because he throws with his right hand and not his left.
No, I agree with you. I totally agree with you. And, you know, we'll get to some mailbag questions, because this is definitely pertaining about, you know, what we're going to be looking for at the trade deadline, because I think this might be, you know, one of those key areas, obviously. Anyway, that was my frustration on that game. Esmel Rodgers, like, it was an absolutely terrible performance. One of the worst performances I've seen this year from a New York Yankee. It was abysmal. It was terrible.
Definitely. And they got out with the win, which is fine.
Thank God. Could you imagine if we lost that game?
It would have been the worst loss of the season.
Yeah, I would have been. Thank God we escaped with that. Thank you, Betances, for coming in and being the beast that you are.
And then Saturday, they got a big first inning. McCann hit another home run. I guess his foot's okay. We didn't mention this, but McCann left the game on Wednesday early in the game with foot soreness, and you know, he got a couple days off and came back Saturday and looked like he could at least deal with the pain.
Yeah, he looked good. I mean, he's looked good. He hit a home run since he's been back, and you know, I think it's something he's been dealing with. I heard something about orthotics, like he switched to a new orthotic or something, and you know, he's had issues with the arch of his foot, which can be very alarming, because you know, those Liz Frank injuries, they seem to linger. It's like a torn, tendon in the bottom of your foot, which I can only imagine how painful that is, you know. And it's just something that you use your feet every day, obviously. It's not something that you can rest. So that's one of those lingering injuries. So hopefully he can manage the pain and it doesn't become an issue later in the season.
But also to come out of this game, and we've said it, I feel like I'm a broken record with this, but Warren is a good starting pitcher.
He is a good starting pitcher. He's one of our, you know, he's stabilizing the back end of our rotation.
Five starts in a row now of quote-unquote quality start. Six innings or more, three earned runs or less. And if you're getting that out of your fourth or fifth guy in the rotation, you sign up for that every time.
No doubt about it. He's looked great. He's really taken this role and shined in it. So, you know, good for him.
Yeah, it's you know what? It's kind of funny, because it does hurt the bullpen, the fact that he's pitching so well out of the rotation, because that would be the right-hander that we'd use in the seventh inning.
That's true, and that's where we thought he was going to go when all these guys came back, but you can't move him.
Nope.
You can't move him. So, you know, I'm interested to see what happens when Nova comes back, and how our situation is going to look then at that point in the year. So we'll see. But Warren's been tremendous. And, you know, we've needed him, because without him being that stable arm in the back of the rotation, you know, this team looks a lot different, I think.
It's easier to find a right-handed reliever that can pitch in the seventh inning than it is to find a quality starter.
So, oh, no doubt about it.
So no way move him. Sunday, today, the Yankees get the win as well. CeCe had a rough first inning, gave up a couple bombs, but really settled into the game nicely. And, you know, the Angels lineup has some hitters, and they, you know, Trout and Pujols, they can hit lefties. And the fact that CeCe settled into that game, he was moving his pitches around, he was throwing his fastball to the inner half of the plate on righties, which is good, and he was using his changeup, he was hitting corners, so I think another step forward for CeCe.
Yeah, his changeup and his slider were both very good today, and he was really, you know, getting guys to miss, and you know, he had a bunch of called called strikeouts, which is a good thing, because that means the batter, you know, obviously was a bit fooled by that pitch, which is very good to see, because
it's what he's going to have
people.
To do. Yeah,
he has to fool people. Yeah, so hopefully, you know, we've said this again, broken record, but you know, it seems like he's kind of maybe settling into that role a little bit more and getting more comfortable with pitching without the velocity that he's had. And you could tell, touching back on this as well, you know, the fire in CC, because in this game, yep, in the sixth inning, he gets tossed at the end of the game. End of the sixth inning, right. It was on a double play ball. He was kind of barking at the home plate umpire, and the home plate umpire did not have any of it. And then they got real heated. Girardi came out. Both of them got tossed. But he was complaining about the low strike not being called on a ball four.
Yeah. So here's what I'll say about that. First of all, I think it was a blessing in disguise that CC got tossed from the game, because I think they would have brought him back out for the seventh inning if he stayed in the game. And we know that he hits a wall after the sixth inning. So I wanted him out of the game anyway. But what are you doing, CC? It's one thing to get fired up, but you can't get run from a game in the middle of a game that you're pitching well in.
I got zero problems with him getting run there, and I'll tell you why. For a few reasons. One, I have a feeling he knew that was his last inning. I think he knew he was done through six. And with CC, I want that fire in him, because I need him. It just proves how much of a competitor he is. And I'll tell you this, knowing that I think he knew it was his last inning, and he's a leader on that team. You know, him getting fired up and getting tossed when he knows it's his last inning, I got no problems with that, because he's kind of, you know, showing that he's not going to take that, from the umpire and you know, with that low strike, and he's kind of defending the strike zone for the Yankees at that point at home. Like, he's got to get that call at home, and he wasn't getting it. So I think he was completely in the right for getting fired up. And I think the umpire pushed back a little much, and that's why he got tossed. You know, if you look at the replay and the way it went down, he was just kind of like asking, that was low, that was low, that was low. And then the umpire got offended by that, and that's, he gave him a quick hook.
Yeah, and CJ Wilson was getting the low strike. I know a couple Yankee batters complained about low strikes. So I think CC just wanted the strike zone to be equal, which is
that's right.
Totally
at
fine.
Home, where you should be getting that call.
But listen, if Girardi and CC had a conversation before the sixth saying, after this inning, no matter what happens, you're done, then I have no problem with CC getting fired up there and getting run from the game. But if that conversation didn't happen, I think that was an immature move on CC, getting thrown out from a game that he's pitching well in.
Yeah, well, we're going to disagree on this one, because I have zero problem with it. I love the fire. I love the fire. The fact that, he kind of defended the strike zone.
And Yankees rely on the long ball again. Young, Gardner, and Perella all went yard. Gardner had the big one, 3-run blast. Perella is a happy fella, Scott. I don't know if you heard that, but that was Sterling's call of Perella's first career home run, which, goddamn, Sterling, that is an atrocious home run call.
Yeah, we're going to need a better effort on you on that particular call. That was pretty bad. But congratulations on Jose Perella, the youth, the hope at second base, who is now, you know, gotten a couple games under his belt where he's playing, and you can see the potential on that bat. And he's holding down second base, man. Give me him at second base every day, please.
Yes, I think we've beat that horse to death by now. But
yes, I want him playing every day at second base, every day.
And it was another thing about the wait, hold on. Do you want to see him at second base? How often?
Every day. Okay. Every single day.
Got it. So Chris Young hit a home run. He had been in a terrible slump, so maybe, you know, he can get going again. He kind of carried their bench for the first month of the season, so
carried their bench, carried their team. I mean, he was playing. He got himself into an everyday role when Beltran was just, you know, abysmal in right field. You know, Chris Young was playing against everybody early in the season. So yeah, he's been a big part of how the Yankees were able to kind of get off the hump early in the season.
You know, he doesn't need to hit 330 with a ton of home runs, but if he can just be a legit fourth outfielder and a threat off the bench to go yard, that's huge.
See, that's exactly the role that Stephen Drew needs to be. That's the same thing, right? He's a plus defender, and gives you flexibility. Young can do the same thing, and he's got pop late in the game.
Wow, boom. I just walked into that trap, huh?
Yes, you did. Yes, you walked into that one.
I'm not giving you credit, though. You didn't plan that.
No, I did not plan that. That's why it was even more beautiful. So that's exactly why he's, that's what you're looking for from your bench guys.
All right, upcoming schedule, they're off today, or they're off Monday, and then they got two versus the Nationals, and then they're off Thursday, and then they got three in Baltimore, so hopefully they can keep the train rolling. I want to talk about the AL East for a second. Everyone keeps saying it's a weak division, it's a weak division, it's a weak division. If you look at the overall records of the teams, yeah, you can make that argument, considering only the Yankees and Tampa are above 500 and we're in June already. But just because it's you to say it's a weak division doesn't mean it's an easy division to win, because I think a lot all these teams are fairly equally matched. So I think any one of the five could win the division. So it's not a cakewalk for the Yankees or any team to win the quote-unquote weak division. They still need to play better than the other teams. So that's really what I wanted to say about the, you know, what everyone's saying about the AL East.
Well, and the other thing about the AL East is it's going to come down to the matchups within the division. And there's never an easy game in the AL East when you're playing another AL East opponent, right? Like, Baltimore always plays us tough. The Red Sox are obviously going to play us tough. Toronto and Tampa always play us tough. You know, Tampa's like the one snake in the grass that's kind of scaring me, just because I know they're getting reloaded on the pitching side and they already have good pitching. And if that offense gets hot, or if they find a guy that, you know, that starts raking, that's the one team to me that's like kind of the snake in grass. But I think clearly the Yankees have the most talent in the division. And then, you know, the starting pitching, I think clearly we have the best with the 1-2 of Tanaka and Pineda. So, I mean, I agree with you, but I just, you know, I think it's going to be the games within the AL East when they're playing each other.
Oh, it's
they're never a cakewalk.
Yeah. 100% going to come down to the last 2 weeks in September between two or three of these teams. But just a quick update on you know, some of the teams, because we did the AL East preview in one of our first episodes, and we really haven't talked much about these other teams. But Baltimore, who has won the division the last 2 years, has really struggled, and it's actually their offense that has let them down. They're 10th in the league in runs scored, when the last couple years their offense has carried them. You know, guys like Chris Davis and Adam Jones.
And Nelson Cruz.
And, yeah, last year, Nelson Cruz. Yep, that's huge. Yes. That's a huge loss. Markakis is gone as well.
Yep.
So their offense has really struggled, and they're in last place right now, and they've been on a tailspin.
I really think that they overlooked that Nelson Cruz loss. I think I predicted this kind of in the beginning of the season when we were talking about this, is that he's going to be one of those guys you just cannot replace. Now, Chris Davis has his power numbers have come back, and you know he's driving in runs. I think he's got 12 home runs on the year as of today. So there is power there, but there is a gaping hole when you leave out Nelson Cruz, who right now is one of the top offensive players in Major League Baseball. So you can't replace that.
Absolutely. And the Red Sox have been a weird team all year. They have, I think, the worst average with runners in scoring position, which when you think about some of their players, you know, Dustin Pedroia, David Ortiz, Hanley Ramirez, Mike Napoli, I mean, say what you want about those guys, but they're usually pretty clutch hitters, and they just haven't been this year.
Yeah, and you know they're obviously as long as they stick around, they're going to be a threat. And I hope at some point they can, you know, hit a losing streak and just kind of fade off into the sunset. But their pitching is just no good. They have no pitching. And
well,
if those guys
are
offense
I
know, but their pitching is bad as well. But those guys are not hitting in runners in scoring position, they're really not going to win games. Yeah. So
they're losing games 8-7, and then they're losing games 3-2. It's just like one of those seasons for them.
They swept Oakland like we should have done. They took care of that business.
Yep. And hopefully, like you said, though, the Red Sox can just be fading away mid-August, because I know I'll get a lot of enjoyment out of that.
Yeah, and you just don't want that team to kind of hover around, because you never know.
But an early prediction for me, I know it's only June, but I think it's going to come down to the Yankees and Tampa. And I actually do think the Red Sox will make a little bit of a push. I could see them sort of hanging around until sometime early September for this division. What do you think?
I'll disagree on that a little bit. I think the Red Sox are going to fade. I think the Red Sox, all this stuff is going to catch up to them, and they're going to fade. I think they could finish in last place at this point. Toronto. I don't know. I can never believe in Toronto, man. Honestly, like, Toronto hasn't scared me in I don't know how many years, but I just feel like they're always like faking it. You know what I mean? They're never real, but they have talent. There's a lot of talent on that team. I'll say that. So you know, they're probably going to hover in that area. But to me, Baltimore could get hot. Baltimore is a team that could get hot and play good baseball. So I think it's going to come down to, obviously, I think the Yankees are going to be at the top of the division. I really do, because I think they have the best talent, and they're hitting the ball this year. They're hitting it like we didn't expect them to hit it. And you called it early, you know, the wild card being Mark Teixeira, and he truly has been. And he's if he continues to hit and A-Rod continues to hit, it's going to be tough to beat the Yankees, obviously, if we stay healthy.
Mark Teixeira is in the MVP conversation. He's not the MVP of the league. Obviously, you got guys like Nelson Cruz with unbelievable stats, but he's in the conversation, which is huge for this team.
And if A-Rod, I mean, A-Rod's, you know, we talked about this last week where he's starting to hit the off-speed pitch. His average, I think he's hitting 280 plus right now. So you're seeing that batting average coming back as well. So he's getting on base a lot. His batting average is up. You know, his power has, I think, plateaued a little bit. But that's okay. If he can get on base and just continue to drive in runs, that's where we want him. But and stay on the field, you know, staying healthy. So, yeah, you know, all signs are looking good right now in the Bronx.
All right, so a couple of news items. We mentioned, obviously, Carpenter and Brendan Ryan, but this one, I think, maybe took a couple people by surprise. The Yankees are skipping Pineda's next start. Health-wise, he's fine. I think they just want to limit his innings. He's currently on pace for 220, so that's a lot, and I think they probably want to have him around 200 for the year. So the next time he'll be pitching is June 12th.
And they actually came out and said 220 was unacceptable, was what the quote was, too. And I think a lot of what they don't want to see is what happened to Steven Strasburg a couple years ago, right, when they had to shut him down late in the game, and the Nats were literally making a playoff run at that point when they could have used him badly.
Yeah.
And they don't want to see, you know, maybe, I don't know if there's a hard count for Pineda. It doesn't seem like there's a hard count for him for innings as far as, like, drop dead, but I think managing it early is the way to go. If they are going to manage it. So, you know, I'm all right with it, I guess.
And in the long run, I think this is the right move. But don't be surprised if Pineda struggles his next start out. You know, when guys sit for a week and a half, and they're normally pitching every fifth day, and then all of a sudden they go 10 days, 12 days without pitching, he could struggle. And so I wouldn't be surprised if he struggles his next time out.
And baseball players, I think, more with almost any sport, you know, they're up there. They're so dependent on routines. And just like you said, you know, him being out of that routine a little bit, and his days are changed, you know, with the way he throws. And now it's a bit altered. I could see that as well. I could definitely see him struggling a little bit on his next outing.
Also, Ivan Nova is pitching for the Tampa Yankees on Monday, which is a huge step closer to the closer to the majors for him. So I think we're going to be seeing him sometime midsummer.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully, he can come out, get some work in, get that arm strong, and he'll be a welcome addition.
You can never have too much pitching.
That's right. That's right. And I'll tell you the one piece of news that's scaring me is Brendan Ryan, you know, rehabbing in AAA, because I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, like you said, Perella's got the option, so he's going to be sent down, and I don't think that's the right move for this team.
All right, you ready to get into the mailbag?
Yes, sir. Let's do it.
All right. Just quickly before the mailbag, I just want to mention the voicemail line again, 646-480-0342. We have not really gotten any voicemails. We did get one, which we played a couple weeks ago. We have not gotten many voicemails. We would love it if you guys could call in. It would be awesome. But so far, the mailbag has been awesome. We've gotten a number of submissions, so definitely excited about that. I would love to get a mailbag / voicemail section of this podcast every week. So
no
that's,
doubt.
That's my spiel. Let's hit it.
Cool. All right, so the first question is from David Cunningham. On Twitter, he's at @D_Cunningham12. So thanks, David, for sending this one in. And it's a pretty straightforward question. I think a lot of people want to know, what kind of moves, if any, should the Yankees make before the trade deadline?
So we just posted something on the site that the Yankees are interested in second base help, whether that's from the minors or from a trade. So I know that's been, you know, talked about a number of times, but they are looking for somebody to step up at second base. And they've got to find another righty out of the pen. I don't know if it's in a trade scenario or what, but those, for me, would be my top two.
I definitely think they're going to look and upgrade the bullpen on the right-hand side, no doubt about it. I think they will do that with trade. I think they are going to look heavily into that. I don't really understand the second base you know, trading for a second baseman personally, just because of the depth in AAA, and you know, with guys that we have are literally coming up in that position. So I don't really understand that, and I don't know what we could really get. I mean, what are you going to get? Another? I don't know. The guys that you're going to get to me are probably on par with Drew and Ryan, yeah, right? You know,
unless you're trading for Zobrist, which I don't think they're going to do, right? Then is it really worth it?
Yeah, so I don't actually think they're going to do that, but I definitely see them going after right-handed relief pitching, and I could actually see them entering the market for maybe another starting arm as well, because again, you can't get enough arms. Well, I could see them.
They have Nova. They have Nova coming back. That's like, yep, a little mini trade in the, right, middle of the season.
But he's coming off of injury. He's coming off of Tommy John. So, you know, we have to wait and see how he is. And it's not a definite that he's going to come back strong in the way he was, right? So that's why I think they're going to be exploring that starting pitching market.
Yeah. And I think
don't think they're going after a major guy either.
No. I do think they have some depth in the minors, whether they want to call it up or not. You know, guys like Severino and Brian Mitchell are both right-handed who, right, later in the season could fill a right-handed void in the pen.
No, absolutely. Severino is perfect. I think that's a great person to bring up, because obviously he's one of the top touted guys in our minors at this point, and he just got moved up to AAA last week or 2 weeks ago. So he's one step away now from the show, and I think that corresponding move was for this reason, right? So to have that option later in the season, especially when the rosters expand.
Yep. All right. Thanks for the question, David. What do we got next?
All right, so this one is from Alex Fulton. I did not get your Twitter handle, so make sure you guys, when you put them in, also, if you don't mind, please put your Twitter handle in the message of the body of the mailbag as well. So Alex says, hey guys, love the podcast. Thank you, Alex. Appreciate that. Wanted to know your thoughts on CC for a minute. He's proven to be inconsistent and unable to pitch in the middle and late innings. While I'm glad we have designated David Carpenter for assignment,
me too.
I feel like CC doesn't deserve a spot in the rotation. So if you could play Joe Girardi for a minute, is there anyone else you would like to see get a chance in the rotation besides CC?
That's a good question, and it's a tough question, because in a perfect world, I think you would give other guys a shot, because CC has been very up and down this year. But the reality is he's making $24 million a year, and he's not going anywhere.
He's not going anywhere, and I mean, it's just not going to happen. So, the last couple starts from him have definitely been
improved.
More, yeah, improved, and you know, on the side, you know, we can maybe see some more optimism there. So, you know, hopefully he's learning again how to pitch with lesser stuff, and he's, you know, maybe making strides in more of a consistent way.
All right, so Alex asked me to play Joe Girardi. I'm yeah, going to play Joe Girardi here.
Okay.
In a CC start, I'm telling him, you know, give me what you got for five innings, and if you're looking good, I'll let you start the sixth, but you're not starting the seventh.
That's maybe he did that today, and that's why he got tossed. So
maybe
you and Joe are on the same wavelength.
CC is a five to pushing it to six inning pitcher, and that's it at this point.
I agree. I've seen people write up this past week or two. I've seen, you know, a bunch of different articles around the kind of the Yankee blogosphere as well about them, you know, limiting him to five innings, and that's just what he is at this point. He's a five inning guy, and you know, the numbers prove it. I mean, you put out the numbers about how the OPS you know, drastically goes through the ceiling when
it doubles,
you
know, pretty much.
Yeah, so you know, unless he can prove otherwise, that is exactly who he is. But he's not going anywhere.
All right. Good question, Alex. And, you know, I guess it remains to be seen what CC is this year. But he's not been their biggest problem. So I guess that's good.
Cool. So we actually have one more question from Alex. He submitted a couple, but we'll do one more just to talk about the All-Star game too. He said, do you think we will see an AL All-Star offensive lineup with zero Yankees this year? I know Ellsbury might be in the running, but what do you think? Go Yanks. What do you think?
Yeah. So I was I saw he put this question in there, and then I went and looked up the starters for the All-Star game if it were to start, you know, tomorrow. And there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Kansas City Royals. So I guess
Kansas City Royal fans work? Do they have jobs?
Well, like, what happened is there's a number of bandwagon fans from that little World Series appearance last year, and I think they're really stuffing the ballots there.
I don't know, bandwagon Royals fan. That's a new thing, but yeah, they're definitely coming out in full force with the voting. So Doesn't not look like there's going to be a Yankee.
So here's the starters right now. Salvador Perez, catcher for the Royals. First base is Miggy from the Tigers. Second base, Jose Altuve from the Astros. Shortstop is Alcides Escobar from the Royals. Third base is Moustakas from the Royals. In center, we got Lorenzo Cain. Trout is also out there. And Alex Gordon from the Royals. And the DH is Nelson Cruz. Looking at those nine starters, I don't know, you know, if I'm saying who deserves from the Yankees to be in there more than those guys. I don't think anybody. Ellsbury was definitely on pace, if he didn't get hurt, to be the starting center fielder or a left field position or something like that. But I don't know if you can start, you know, Teixeira is having a great season, but he's not going to win out over Miguel Cabrera. So I think the answer is no. There will be no Yankees in the starting lineup.
Yeah, that's okay. We'll fly under the radar. We'll just keep flying under the radar. Everybody says we're not going to be good, and we're just going to, you know, keep succeeding and doing what we're doing. And, you know, gluten-free Mark Teixeira will have to settle for, you know, he should make the team.
Definitely. He'll be on the
team. You know, so he'll be there, but, you know, just not in the starting rotation.
And I want to see A-Rod on the team.
That's not going to happen. But, yeah, it's not going to happen, though.
All right.
As much as people, the A-Rod supporters want him, he's not going to be there.
All right, so thanks everybody who submitted to the mailbag. If we didn't get to your question, I apologize. We'll you know, keep sending them in, and we'll definitely get in as many people's questions as we can. I'm really enjoying this part of the podcast, so definitely thank you to the submissions.
Yeah, awesome. So big week last week. You know, we got to keep it going. Off day on Monday, which is good. Get these guys rested. Get that bullpen rested. And we should be, you know, flying on all cylinders when we go into Baltimore and Washington. So that Washington series is kind of a little payback series, in my opinion.
Two off days this week, so not going to be a ton of Yankee baseball midweek. But I guess you can watch The Wire Monday and Thursday night.
There you go. I got one more season to go. We're on the final season, so it's a great show. Actually, it's perfect to watch to finish the season out in The Wire, right? Because we're going to be in Washington and Baltimore this week. So
there you go. I've never seen it.
Oh, it's great. You should watch it. It's one of the best shows
I've heard. I've heard it's great. It's on my list of TV shows to eventually watch. You know, the problem is, it's like I have like 4 months to watch TV, and the rest is just consumed by Yankees baseball.
Yeah, I get it.
So, all right. Good talking with you, and I guess we'll see you next time.
See ya. Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.